is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. As a singer and as a vocal expert, I know the singular power of allowing the voice to be free. Those moments when the discipline of technique and creativity becomes so natural that we can release sound with controlled abandon and let it soar. Today, I have an artist with me in the studio who has literally developed the art of soaring. In fact, as an aerial artist and opera singer, she has mastered the art of flying. Soprano Renelle Krause has cornered her market in a stunning tour de force in acrobatics and vocal mastery. There is a beauty in watching her as she performs the Queen of the Night's fiendishly difficult arias from Mozart's Magic Flute, while wrapped in silk suspended from the ceiling. Contorting her body and executing all manner of balletic moves while draped in the air. To say that she has found a niche is an understatement. She has had the finest training in the world as a singer at Indiana University, the Opera Factory, as many refer to it, and as an aerial artist, she refers to Kate Conklin, who challenged her to try this unusual art form. Renelle Krause performs the Queen of the Night and many other roles with fiery performances, and she is in demand all over the world, from opera houses such as the Berlin Staatsoper, English National Opera, Houston Grand, the Royal Danish, and Basel, just to name a few. Well, Renelle joins me now from London, where she is singing her signature role with English National Opera. Renelle, welcome to Center Stage. It is such an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. No, thank you for having me. What a beautiful introduction.
I try, because as a singer myself, I know exactly what everyone is going through at your level of the game. And it's so important that we keep positive, especially at this point in the arts. But I want to just say one thing to start with. How fantastic that you have developed a life of wonder. I mean, here you are as a trained singer, you know, we're churning out hundreds of trained singers all the time, but you have designed a life filled with artistry and a real vision. How fun is this for you? You're like a little kid. You're still at play.
Thank you. That's really the way that I think about it. I mean, look, I've had a lot of luck and frankly, a lot of privilege in my journey to the way that I've been able to create my life. Mm-hmm. But within those confines, I've still really had to come to grips with exactly what it is that I want out of this experience, out of this career, out of my art, out of my body, out of my relationships in the industry at large, my relationship to music. And so answering a lot of those questions has led me to this deep understanding that what we do is the most serious, important kind of play, which I think is deeply important as humans.
That's wonderful, and especially as an artist. So did you ever consider that when you were at Indiana, that you would literally be flying through the air in some of your work?
No, never in a million years. I never really had much luck with athletics. I'm very hypermobile by nature, which means that I'm really unsteady. I don't have a lot of structural integrity to my body. And so I finished my master's at Indiana, and then I happened to do a pay-to-sing program in Los Angeles called Opera Works, where I met Kate Conklin, who ended up being one of the most pivotal people in my life. And she'd been singing with Cirque du Soleil for a few years. And, you know, she comes as an Alexander technician, as a trained singer herself. She was operatically trained and had a Fulbright to Bulgaria, where she specialized in Bulgarian women's choral music. So her expertise is varied. And the artists that she works with are all over the map, which is incredible because she brings all of it to the work. So I met her and she said, you know, I really think you want to go take an aerial class. I know a great instructor who's in the area. You ought to go. And I looked at her. I thought, absolutely not. With this body, with it, no way. And so eventually I did go to a class. I went as part of a group of singers and we all thought we'd, okay, well, let's go have a good time and, you know, do a few things and see what we can do. And luckily I was strong enough to be able to climb on the first class, which I think made a big difference for me. So I climbed all the way to the top and I got up there and I thought, oh, I love this. Oh, I'm excited about this. This is something that I could do that physically and artistically really gets me going. And because the aerial instructor knew that we were all singers, at the end of the class, she tied a very low knot in the silks, super low to the ground, had us carefully flip upside down. So we were suspended, sort of the knot of the fabric is sitting about on the small of the lower back, and you're using your legs, the top of your thighs, to kind of drive toward your face a little bit to keep you kind of steady. But basically, it engages the entire pelvic floor and puts the work in your legs the same way that we are taught to root into the ground when we sing. And so she had us kind of go down the line and just try singing for fun. And she got to me and I sang and I thought, oh my God, I could do this all day if I weren't worried about passing out. I could do this all day. And that's where it started.
And why would you be passing out just from the sheer, you know, I don't know, it's overwhelming, I suppose, but the athletic.
Well, no, I mean, spend enough time upside down and the blood rushes to your head. Okay. And when you flip back around, you run a risk. You can acclimate to it, you know, sort of like acclimating to spinning, the way that figure skaters acclimate to spinning super fast or any number of other things.
Right. This is so interesting. So getting back to Kate and her urging you to go into this class, did she see something in your body or the way you moved on stage that she wanted to free up? Or was she just giving you a challenge?
No, that was it exactly, which I found out later. Yeah, she and I had been talking, and this was at a point in my development as a singer where I didn't have solid high Fs, and it irritated me. Because I really felt, you know, I would think about my instrument and singing in the way that it felt as I would do vocalises or rep or things. And I'd think, there's no reason. I have a beautiful, full high E. What do you mean that I can't get to an F? That seems ridiculous. Yeah. But I really, it was never solid. It never felt right. And I didn't want to push it, you know, but it bugged me. So I went to Kate, and the first day that I worked with her in a like classroom group setting, and she said, if there were one thing that you could work on, what would it be? And I was like, well, my high F. There's no reason I shouldn't have one, but I just can't figure it out. And she had me do a series of sort of imagery-based exercises and some really gentle Alexander-style alignment to encourage more freedom. And the biggest thing that she told me was, okay, while you're thinking about this cue, I don't want you thinking about the sound that's coming out at all. I don't care what kind of sound comes out, and it might be ugly, and that's okay, because what we're trying to do is create a sound that you have not yet created. So you might have to experiment a little to find it.
Exciting. Exciting.
Yeah. And then I popped out a couple of high A flats like it was no big deal. And I thought, oh, well, that'll make the Fs easier.
So that's just taking that lower pelvis and your lower back and just stretched it and allowed you to just be totally free.
Well, that, and also when you're upside down, gravity's on your side.
Yep.
You know,
right.
when you're upright, so many people think about, you know, oh, I really have to lift the soft palate, or I have to give myself all this space. I have to be, you know, working against gravity, which we can, you know, get into that. That's maybe not the most helpful cue, but a lot of people do think of it that way, at least when they start. When you're upside down, soft palate's already up because it's, gravity's helping you. The entire instrument becomes immediately aligned with the spine because the weight of the head acts as a way to sort of traction the spine into a stable but neutral position.
So well said. So well said as a fine singer. So tell me, how long did it take you to master this, or you felt, I mean, I'm presuming you were just really turned on by this and really ran with the ball, right?
I did.
And you started training, you know, consistently and heavily.
I did, yes. Well, and it was also at a point where I didn't have a lot of singing work. I was right in the middle of doing as many auditions as I could fit in, and I wasn't having very much success. So it helped to have something else in my life that gave me a sense of exponential progress. Every time I went to a class, I could do something better, or I would learn something new, or I would learn something about my body. And it, you know, it just gives you this sense of forward progression that I wasn't really getting necessarily in my vocal career at the time. So I spent a lot of time in the aerial gym. And while I wouldn't say that I have mastered it by any means, I did feel confident enough to start building specifically my Queen of the Night routine. That took about 3 years.
3 years, really? Wow. Tell me about this silk product, because I've never done anything like this. Is the silk actually, it's so strong. I know that as a product, but is it malleable? Is there some stretch to it, or is it really solid?
Good question. You can get it in varying stretch. So it depends on the act that you want to do. It depends on the type of moves that you're doing, the type of drops that you're doing. So for instance, a lot of artists that do a lot of big dramatic drops prefer a silk with some stretch because when you hit the bottom, it cushions a bit. Whereas if you're an artist that is doing more ambient sets where you really kind of want to climb and kind of stay up for a bit because the whole time you're in the air, you're fighting gravity that's trying to drag you down. So on a stretch fabric, it takes a lot of strength and just a lot of technique, frankly, to climb up the stretch. I mean, I've been on a couple of high stretch fabrics and you just feel like you're swimming in place. It's like I'm climbing and I'm going nowhere. Whereas on a fabric with no stretch, you can really get up there. But if you do big dramatic drops on those, it's gonna hurt a lot worse. I mean, it all hurts, but it just depends on the kind of act that you want to do.
Incredible. So, do you work without a net? Or in the beginning, I'm presuming that you did work but with a safety net, of
We
course,
don't
in the
work with
beginning.
nets. We don't work
Ever.
with nets. We don't work with lines, but we do work with crash pads.
Crash pads. So, like a sort of mattress kind of stuff
Yep,
landing.
like a big mat, and usually it's layers of mats. So you've got a couple of firmer mats underneath, and then a crash pad on top, so that if you fall from height, you will be less likely to break something. But honestly, with good training, you shouldn't really have the opportunity to fall from height.
This is incredible, just incredible. Wow. So this whole communion of form and music making, I mean, you can really find the arc in a phrase, literally. I mean, you really can. This is so incredible. So how many productions have you done where you have really performed with your aerial work?
Sure. I mean, tell you the truth, not that many. You know, I've done student showcases at my gym in Dallas, and I've created acts for those. I did a show called Mystique. It was a one night only event, a circus opera fusion that was down in New Orleans. Brian Emel was running that for a little bit, and we had a great time. It went so well the first year that we revamped it the next year, but it really was like an exclusive one night event. We've got this series of acts, and we brought in opera singers and these incredible circus artists, and they would collaborate on sort of having the circus artists choreograph to what the singer was doing. And then it would culminate with me doing both at the same time.
Well, I can tell you honestly, we have never had anything like this on this show on Center Stage. And I'm thrilled to present this because for some time now, well, really ever since COVID, and maybe slightly before, if I'm being really honest, I've been urging all sorts of artists to diversify. I really feel a need in our world as it's changing, and certainly as our political world turns on its axis. And I'm talking about the world, not the United States. The arts have become different. The platform for the arts is shifting. And I think my advice to young singers is always have a side hustle, always be looking further beyond, use your integrity, use your talent pool, to build whatever you can. It makes you stronger as an artist, more complete. And obviously, it's going to help us going forward when there are less jobs. And I hate to sound like the voice of doom, but, things are shifting, they're changing. So for you, drawing this in, I mean, did you ever think, wow, maybe I should just give up the opera singing and just go off and join Cirque du Soleil?
I was never going to join Cirque du Soleil. I came to Silks late. I came to Silks at 25. And just due to the way that my body is, I'm so injury prone that I've
Really?
always, incredibly injury prone, which has actually caused a complete hiatus in my training for the last 2 years. I miss being in the air so much.
I can imagine.
But I would say, I always knew that I am a better singer than I am an aerialist. And I just know that about myself. And when I look at the possibility to improve my aerial skills, I could, but it would take such an immense amount of time and such an immense amount of training that where I am in my operatic career, which is really kind of on an exponential incline, I don't have the time or the funds available to want to divert it to what I would need to in order to really hit professional status as an aerialist. Now, there are other singers that do. I mean, Marcy Richardson is incredible. She also is not as injury prone as I am. She has a different body type. She has a different genetic makeup. She has a different lifestyle. You know, she's an incredible, incredible circus artist, also a phenomenally talented singer. Mm-hmm. But we just have completely different career goals and lifestyles, which is perfectly fine. But no, I did hit a point where I thought very seriously about giving up singing, not in favor of Silks, but entirely.
Really?
Yeah. I was 29, which that was a long time to be auditioning relentlessly and not getting very much traction. I auditioned for almost every single young artist program in the country, almost every single year long, multiple times, and I never got into a single one of them. I did a few pay to sings. I did my best to connect in my local area, especially after we moved to Fort Worth. And I did, I made some good relationships with conductors in the area, did a few small things. I did a few small productions, you know, sort of around. I got bits of work. And I kept asking everywhere that I went, I would find someone further along in the career than me, or I would talk to conductors or coaches or teachers or people that I trusted. And I would say, is it me? Is there something wrong with my voice? Is there something I need to work on? Is there something that is truly preventing me from getting my foot in the door of this industry? And overwhelmingly, the feedback was, it's not you. It's a numbers game. It is a luck thing. It is how long can you hang around in it? How long can you stand the constant rejection, the constant expenditure, the sacrifices that are required in terms of what you might want for your life in order to eventually get to a point where someone will give you a chance and then it will take off. So, you know, I did that for a few years and then I hit 29. And I thought, okay, you're going to be 30 in a few weeks. And this is miserable to want something so badly, so deeply in your soul that you can taste it and to not be able to have the chance to do it. It is too painful. So you know what? You're a smart lady. You can go back to school. You can do anything else that you want. You can find something else. I had an agent audition a couple of days after I had this talk with myself. And so I said, you know what? You're going to go to New York. You're going to sing for this agent. You're going to sing the best you've ever sung in your life. And if you don't get any tangible progress in getting to where you want to be in an operatic career, then you're going to find something else to do with your life. So I went and I sang for this agent. This is the second time that I'd sung for her. And I still remember she sat there and she said, huh, you know, it's really nice when people come back and they're better than they were. She was like, we don't have a Queen of the Night on the roster. Would you like to be on the roster? And I said, oh, okay.
Hello.
Because that was positive feedback. But I think it really helped that I had given myself permission to walk away. I had given myself permission to understand if this is ever making you so miserable that it's not worth it, do something else with your life. I don't have to be here doing this, but right, given the opportunity, well, let's go for a ride and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I've known lots of singers who've given themselves the same ultimatum and come away, you know, without something. And so, you know, good for you, Rinnell, for actually making that challenge to yourself and coming through. That's absolutely fantastic. I'm thrilled you've got management. That means everything in this world right now.
It does. It's very helpful. I mean, it's not everything. And I know a number of singers that are making good careers without management. But for me, with the way that my resume looked and the way that my career was going, it really made an enormous difference.
And let's face it, you do have a niche, you know, besides the aerial work right now, I'm just talking about Queen of the Night and your fantastic coloratura performances. Was coloratura something that was your brand from the beginning, Rinnell, or did you play, you know, with different voice classifications?
It was pretty obvious from the start. Okay. I was lucky with that, you know, and I started at university as an undergraduate. You know, my teacher gave me the simple starter aria that everyone gets, and you're building a technique and you're learning how to breathe and you're learning, you know, all of these things. But it was pretty clear from the get-go that facility and ease and speed and clarity were kind of what my instrument is suited for.
Thank you. So tell me this, what is your relationship with the Queen? You know, after all of these performances, you know, how do you keep her fresh?
So that's the thing. I get a lot of people asking me, "Oh my God, aren't you bored? You've done it so many times. Aren't you bored of it?" No, not at all. Not right now. I mean, and look, the day may come, sure, but as of right now, when I walk into the theater every night to do a performance, or when I'm on a new production, right, with a new concept, with potentially a different understanding of the character, I'm a new person every time I walk into the theater. The state of my body is different. The state of my mind is different. What's going on in my life is different. What's going on in the world is different every time. So I get to take all of the circumstances of my life at that particular moment and crystallize them down into a new performance. They get to feed the emergent properties of what happens on stage,
Very
which
well said.
I find it fascinating.
Tell me this, are you a type A personality?
Oh, what gave it away?
I love it. I think anyone who's living in Texas and trying to carve out a career has definitely got to be. I mean, you said in one of your interviews that I heard that hey, there's an airport nearby. I'm good to go, you know? Same with my friend Laura Dixon Stricling when she was living in the Virgin Islands and still carving out a career for herself worldwide. You know, it takes that kind of mental focus, which you've got. So tell me about your husband. Tell me about your family. I mean, what are your values that keep you in Texas and you know, kind of like out of the whole New York scene? I mean,
Sure. So my husband and I have been together for a long time. We met in school, and
nice.
when we were talking about where to move, he'd had just finished his PhD in business. His specialty is strategic management, and he really wanted to go into a research-heavy academic career. So he wanted to go to a school that really prioritized and resourced research for their faculty members. Most of those universities are in the middle of nowhere. And I said, I can't do it. I can't do an hour and a half, 2 hour commute to an airport.
Right.
So we narrowed it down and we looked at, okay, what cities have a school that you could potentially be happy at, and be building the career that you want to build, and also have the amenities of allowing me to get out like quickly and easily. And so Dallas-Fort Worth ended up on the top of that list. Texas Christian University invited him out, had a kind of great interview process. He thought he could be happy there for a bit, and I thought, okay, well, the weather's not bad and there's an airport and it's a major city, so I can find my people. I'll be able to get into an art scene. I'll be able to, find sort of my niche in the community, hopefully. And I did over time, which was nice.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad you've got that support with your family. That is absolutely fantastic. You know, you sit here and you speak about your career and singing and forging this amazing career, and you make it sound so easy, Rinelle. You have such confidence. It's actually quite beautiful.
I thank you. I appreciate that. I would say, though, for anyone listening, especially anyone who's in that middle period where you're out of school and you're not quite working, or you're not working enough, or you're not working at the level that you want to be at, and everything makes sense in hindsight. So I can look at my career, such as it is, and say, oh, well, yeah, I went to this program and I met this person, and that led to this, and that led to this. And then I had this amazing opportunity, and that went, yeah, and here we are. But when you're in the middle of it, none of it makes sense. You're looking into a vast expanse of nothing and hoping that something will work out.
That's right. And it might take 10, 20 years, as many have found out. And some careers develop late. There's no doubt about it. It's the staying power that matters, isn't it?
Well, it's the staying power for sure, but it's also being very real with yourself, because I think there comes a point in the career where it is no longer worth it. If you're a 35-year-old singer who is not getting what you want out of your life, you do not have to stay in this career. There are so many ways to have fulfilling musical and artistic experiences that do not include pursuing this career in this industry full time. And I think there's a lot of grief around giving up a dream like that, but
Of
I think
course.
there's a lot of freedom too. I've known a number of people who found their most fulfilling musical and artistic experiences after they gave up the full-time career and had the stability of another job so that they felt they could make more artistic choices because they
Exactly.
didn't rely on it.
Or do their own projects or do their own recordings and re really own them. This is very true. When it's a conscious decision to give this up, that changes the entire energy. It's when we feel forced or when we feel shamed that we haven't lived up to it. That's where the real problem
Absolutely.
is. The conscious decision is something, too, that's born out of just education. There are many roads we can take. There are many crossover points that can actively be taken. I mean, we're looking at Julia Bullock and Kelly O'Hara. These are people who have been trained and have actually spun a whole new life for themselves in very interesting projects. It's a beautiful thing. It's just not about the standard operatic stage anymore. Coloratura soprano Renelle Krauss has the kind of resolve I wish that all artists could possess. She is currently wowing the audience in the Simon McBurney production of The Magic Flute in London at English National Opera. Every singer should join us in part two of this interview, airing next Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on WGCH Talk Radio. There are lessons to be learned from this young artist about the choices each singer must make in pursuing their dream. The recordings you are hearing today is Renelle with the English National Opera Orchestra in Der Höhle Rache. Find more information at renellekraus.com and hear her recordings on YouTube and social media platforms. And you can go to Center Stage with PamelaKuhn.com for more of my shows. In the meantime, everyone, stay safe out there. This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.
Hear my thunder!